Hello, class. I'm recording this audio summary from Kansas City, Missouri, and we're going to be covering paragraphs 3.5 and 3.7 in Book 2. For the 13th of October's lesson, The Providence of God and a Discussion of Unconditional Election. Let's start with paragraph 3.5, which is well into Book 2. Augustine at this point is 16 years old, and he's discussing memories that he has. Not like in Book 1, where it was a theological opening and then a discussion of what Augustine imagines his youth was like, because he's relaying stories that were probably told to him by his mother and his friends. But Book 2 delves into that time in Augustine's life when he has direct memory, right? If we think back, we kind of don't know what it was like when we were 4 years old or 5 years old, 6 years old. Our memories are just images. There comes a time, especially in the teen years, where when we're in our late 40s, we can reflect back and say, this is exactly what happened. I remember it word for word. And that's where we are in Book 2. In paragraph 3.5, Augustine's 16 years old, and we'll start there. But that my years of studies were interrupted, I was brought back from Madura, a nearby town, where I had been sent in order to learn letters and oratory, so that funds could be gathered for a longer course of study in Carthage. More an impetuous idea of my father's, rather than one based on his limited means, as he was only a modest citizen of the guest. But to whom am I telling this? Not to you, my God, but before you I declare this to my own kind, to mankind, even if only a small part of mankind will come upon such these writings. And why? So that I and whoever reads these words will give thought to the depths out of which we must call out to you. For what is closer to your ear than a confessing heart and a life of faith? Everyone praised my father, who, despite his limited means, strove to provide his son with all that was necessary for a long course of study far away. Many fellow citizens of his, who were far wealthier than he, did not do as much for their children, yet this same father was not concerned about the way in which I was maturing before you, or how chaste I was, as long as I was cultivated, even if that meant not being cultivated by you, my God, who are the only true and good Lord of my heart, your field. Now, in paragraph 3.5, Augustine is discussing his father, a guy who didn't make much money, but was saving it away because he knew his son was a promising young student, and he wanted to send him off to Carthage. He was brought back from Madura because he was learning the elementary aspects of being a lawyer. And I'll give you a little bit of geography. Madura would have been west southwest of where Augustine was growing up, Thagaste. It was, again, North Africa, not anywhere near the Mediterranean, and also not anywhere near the desert, the Sahara. To travel to Madura from Thagaste would have been a four-hour walk, easily doable. Would have taken you all day, but you could have done it. You would have been following the valley of Thagaste west-southwest, and then hopped over a mountain range, and then another valley, another mountain range, and Madura would have been in view as a long plain stretched out south to a farther mountain range, which would have been the barrier to the Sahara Desert. But again, as you're making that walk, or you can imagine Augustine making that walk, maybe coming home on the weekends, he's walking through fields that were cultivated. This was the breadbasket of the Roman Empire. But his father's saving up money for a study in Carthage, and Carthage would have been a nonstop four-day walk east, all the way to the coast. This would have been the first time Augustine would have viewed the Mediterranean. We're talking about a week's journey. So this would have been the equivalent of sending your son or daughter off to Europe for a course. If anything had happened back home, there's no way Augustine could have gotten back home in time. Maybe one of the brothers gets sick, the sister gets sick, mother or dad. So this would have been a big commitment to send his son that far away into Carthage for what would have been a college experience. Another thing in paragraph 3.5, we have the first time when Augustine speaks of writing not only to God, but he looks up probably from writing in his, you know, his room alone, and he thinks of the people that would have read confessions, us, right? He says, But before you, I declare this to my own kind, to mankind, even if only a small part of mankind will come upon these writings. And here's the reason why he wrote Confessions, right here he says it. And why? So that I and whoever reads these words will give thought to the depths out of which we must call out to you. For what is closer to your ear than a confessing heart and a life of faith? Just like Reverend Bauer said, confession is not an obstacle, it's an engine. Confession drives us further into the heart of God. And it's not something that we should shy away from. We'll continue with paragraph 3.7. O my Lord and God, do I dare to say that you remained silent while I strayed further from you? But were you really silent? Whose words, if not yours, were the words that through my mother, your faithful servant, you let ring in my ears? Yet none of those words sank into my heart. I paid them no heed. For my mother begged me, and I remember her taking me aside and with great solicitude, warning me not to commit fornication, and especially never to defile another man's wife. To me, these seemed womanish warnings that I would have blushed to heed, but they were your warnings, though I did not know it, thinking that you were silent and that it was my mother speaking, though it was you who were speaking through her. You were not silent, and yet through my mother, I scorned you. I, her son, the son of your handmaid, your servant. But I did not know, and threw myself headlong into sin with such blindness that I would have been ashamed had my actions been any less shameful than those of my companions, hearing them boast of their lustful deeds. And the greater their sins, the more they vaunted them, while I relished not only the pleasure of my lustful deeds, but the praise I received for them. What is worthy of reproach, if not depravity? But so I would not be reproached, I made myself more depraved. And whenever I could not match my companions in sin, I pretended I had done things I had not done, so that I would not appear to be too contemptible by being too innocent, or too vile for being too chaste. Here we have another one of Augustine's sad thoughts. You know, he's reflecting back on his youth and how he could not match this peer group he had fallen in. He couldn't match them in their sinfulness. One reason I could imagine is that Augustine was always tethered back to the truth through his mother's teachings. And so because he was unable to match his peer group, his little friend group, in their quest to be sinful, he had to lie about it. He did bad things, for sure, but then he lied about things that he hadn't done just to try to match them in their depravity. You know, I was guilty of the same thing in the Air Force. The fighter pilot peer group is an extremely sinful peer group. They praise sinful actions. They vaunt them. And that's a problem for me. That's a problem for every Christian. And the sad thing is, for a period of my career, I feel victim to the same thing that Augustine did. The problem with lying and the problem with trying to match people who are trying to be sinful is not only does it ruin our witness, but it also makes us vulnerable because we've created a mask. We've presented to them, this is who I am. It's not really who we are because we're being restrained by the Holy Spirit that's in us, right? But we're presenting this image. We're lying about our actions to just try to be, right, just as contemptible as they are to get their praise. But when they turn on us and they tell us that we're not good enough, they really are judging that mask that we've made. And it's a devastating assessment. That's why we should never be tempted to lie, especially to lie about trying to be more sinful. And yet you would ask, well, that seems, you know, kind of like a no-brainer. I'll tell you this, when you're in a peer group like that and you're elite, you're at the top level, which he was and I was, peer pressure it's extreme. That's why you have to be grounded in the church. Local accountability. I appreciate that y'all are sitting in Sunday school with me. I know that you could be doing a lot of other things, but I promise you that when I read paragraphs like this from Augustine's life, it encourages me that young men and women like yourselves are surrounded by a peer group that can restrain you. And I just pray that as you launch into adulthood, that the lessons that Augustine went through would echo in your hearts and keep you from falling victim to the same things that he did and that I did. We'll talk more about it on Sunday. God bless y'all.